So if I were to ask you to picture and describe a depressed person, what would you envision, friends? Someone maybe having trouble getting out of bed every day? Someone who's calling into work sick because they can't leave the house, perhaps? Someone who's isolated themselves with friends and family, possibly sleeping long days, 12-hour days? Someone who can't stop crying and who's feeling hopeless, perhaps, right? Or would you envision maybe a college-educated professional, someone living in the big city, great job, great future, friends, a lot of things going well for them, or at least it seems that way on the surface, perhaps, Would you picture a successful millennial, maybe a startup employee whom you admire for their discipline and drive, but who, maybe they're self-critical and relentlessly demanding on themselves? Maybe they have a drink or two, maybe several hours of gaming, look pretty normal on the outside again. Would you picture someone smiling, competent, friendly, maybe a coworker of yours? Someone that always seems pleasant, always has a good smile on their face and ready to take on the day, or seems that way? Well, the people I just described, you're probably not going to see, because they would be called a high-functioning depressive. I want to dedicate today's show to Iron Man Kelly Murphy. And she was a co-host and columnist on this platform who actually took her life and committed suicide. And she was depressed, and she is what I would call a high-functioning depressive. Well, the big question on everyone's mind, it's a gender thing, or is it? World peace, religion, sex, money, politics, climate change, big business, big ideas, and big egos. Nothing is off limits. As I'm joined by some of the most accomplished and highly opinionated women from the far left, the far right, and the far reaches of the planet. This is Malcolm Out Loud, and you're listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. Never knew it. In fact, I had dinner with Kelly probably about a week before she did that. I had no idea. So it kind of catches you. Our co-host today, coming to us from the Northeast here in the States, is Ava Armstrong. And from Monaco, also comes with us, Dr. Andrea Pennington. As I looked up her pages just a few minutes before coming on to the production today with you, I was reminded of what a brilliant woman she was and how much I miss this lady, how incredible she was, so gifted in so many ways. Now, if you're listening to this on our normal talk radio time, if you just go to AmericaOutLoud.com and you take the search bar and you type in Kelly Murphy, you'll get a whole lot on Kelly. You'll get all the columns and the beautiful articles she wrote. And you'll see all the shows she did on her show, which was called High Heels, High Hopes. And you then will scratch your head and shake your head and say, what was he talking about? Because it doesn't make any sense. So she's what we would call high-functioning, in a high-functioning depression, state of depression, if you will. You don't really know it, but there's a whole lot more going on there behind the scenes. So it's not always the obvious of what we think, ladies. It's something far more than that. And Andrea, you heard me talk about Kelly before on the platform and on the show here. I know you have.
I do remember. I remember it, Malcolm. And it's a lot more common than we realize. You know, I just posted this week a statistic that there are more deaths from suicide than there are from cancer. And yet we put on these pink badges and we organize runs and all sort of awareness events around preventing cancer, but there's not that same attention to depression. And it's exactly what you described. So many people, myself included, are these high-functioning depressives. It looks like everything is fine, and we become pretty good at hiding our inner turmoil. So I remember when I just learned about your network from Linus Woods Mullins, and she told me about Iron Man Kelly Murphy. I was shocked, but I wasn't totally surprised, because I know how that feels when everything on the outside looks really, really great and nobody even knows that we're suffering inside. So I'm really glad that we're doing this show. And, I feel terrible because I know that Kelly left behind children who unfortunately now have to try to make sense of all of this.
Yeah, she did. She left behind two young children. They were in their early teens, a young lady and a young man, and nobody seen it coming. I mean, nobody knew that this was the level that she was at. In we talk about, listen to this now. Here's a real mind twister for you all. So in the case of this particular one who I dedicated the show to today, Kelly Iron Man Murphy, the reason we called her Iron Man, you're all going to flip on this when I tell you this. So she was an Iron Man triathlete. She competed and finished the Iron Man twice. And she was, in fact, she was scheduled for a third one just months after this was, after she had taken her life. She had signed up and paid for it already and scheduled for a third one that she was going to do out in Texas. And they were very intense, I remember, because I remember one time interviewing her for my national radio show one evening the night before she was to compete in the Ironman, And it really told a story about her and her discipline and what she was going through as a person. So how can somebody then who lives life on that level, who embraces life for all that it is and appreciates all the beautiful things of this gift we've been given, how can somebody like that, ladies, take themselves out? And now it's one thing, Andrea, when you say, well, I think about it, but it's another thing when you actually do it.
Well, Malcolm, you just described it. If anyone of us, we see this so much among artists and musicians, anyone who feels so strongly the positive side of life, the joy, the beauty, the awe, the majesty of life, quite often they also experience the serious depths of despair and the low and the depression. So whatever was going on inside of her completely blacked out any of that ray of sunshine or ray of light that she felt at the high times.
I also think there's another common thread too. I think these high functioning people are extremely self-deprecating. They're more critical of themselves than anyone else would be. And we don't really see that or know that unless we're super close to them. And by super close, I mean you have to probably live with a person to observe that because they hide that aspect, I think.
You're absolutely right. I know in my case, I was always very, very, very hard on myself, incredibly high standards, so that even if I was successful in achieving most of my goals, it still never felt like it was good enough. And even if it was somewhat good enough, I never really got to that point of being able to enjoy or celebrate even the achievements. And talking with other people with, major depressive disorder, there are a lot of us like that.
Andrea, what you describe right now, is that curable?
Of course it is. And, there's been a lot of controversy lately. I don't know if you've heard about this, Ava and Malcolm, but a lot of people are now saying that it's not a brain condition. We used to say that it was your neurotransmitters were messed up. And, there's recently been people saying that it's more a matter of finding your life purpose and tapping into a spiritual side of you.
And some of it is learned behavior.
Yeah, that is so true. It really is, especially if you happen to grow up around someone else who was depressed. There is this idea that we do have kind of a depression set point. Some people are born to really happy people, and they tend to be the glass is half full kind of optimistic, happy people. And then there are others that are just kind of gloomy. And we do learn to be gloomy. But I do believe, Malcolm, that I think for some people, if they're in the midst of an incredibly low depressive episode, that sometimes medication is what they need. Sometimes unplugging from life and going on a retreat is what is needed. But
Definitely.
I've definitely found that with exercise, with eating right, with getting more sleep, with cutting out alcohol, and even cutting out caffeine can do wonders for helping people tap back into their internal, stores of melatonin and dopamine and those little happy chemicals.
Yeah, I'm just my I'm you know this brings it all back here talking to you today, ladies. Let me describe to you in this very interesting column I started to read when we opened up the production today. And this is really a very good post here. 11 signs that you might be experiencing high functioning depression. And they describe it as a real thing. It's from a blog that's called Scary Mommy. And I always want to give credit to the fabulous bloggers out there and the people doing cool things, okay? So I want to mention that, Scary Mommy, and it's Annie Wright. Annie Wright, looks like. And so she describes a high, what is a high-functioning depression, okay? In my opinion, as a psychotherapist, she says, high-functioning depression is a pop psychology term for what's clinically known as dysthymia. And dysthymia, according to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, is a mental health disorder characterized by the following: depressed mood for most of the day, for more days than not, as indicated by either subjective account or observation by others, for at least 2 years, and includes the presence of two or more of the following symptoms: poor appetite or overeating, insomnia or hypersomnia, low energy or fatigue, low self-esteem, poor concentration, difficulty making decisions, feelings of hopelessness. I find that interesting, ladies, because you know what? In those descriptives, and in the descriptive you just put out there moments ago, Ava and Andrea, is Kelly. She was always not able to do enough. I mean, here she was achieving all kinds of things in her life. She wrote a book just prior called Fear is Horseplay. I'll tell you more about that later. But she did incredible things, again, with the Iron Man and her body and her life. She's an attractive, beautiful lady with everything to live for. And yet, and many of these adjectives that are put out in this post here sort of describe some of the things that possibly were going on with her. And yet, she didn't think she was, somehow, like you described, Andre, you don't think you're good enough, which is like boggles the mind. I used to tell Kelly all the time, are you crazy? Now, this was just, you know, friend conversation we were having. It wasn't any more than, I think you're on life's edge. You know, it wasn't that kind of talk, but it was like, you know, but I would always say to her, get out of here, shut up. Because she would make no sense half the time. As far as, you know, how do you see that signs with somebody that looks so vibrant and fantastic in front of you? And, you know, you just think they're being modest. You know what I mean? Like they're being modest. So I guess she had the skill sets and all the beautiful characteristics that you would want in a person. But yet, you know, she was struggling inside to think that she was, she didn't think she was anything. She thought she was failing.
Yeah. You were seeing that as being humility, which is really a wonderful kind of a thing to have as a person, to be humble. Not to be braggadocio about your achievements. You know, we're kind of schooled that way or taught that way that, you know, we shouldn't really toot our own horn too much. So a lot of times this goes, you know, undiagnosed because we just figure they're being self-deprecating. So, and that's kind, you know, that's kind of a humorous thing sometimes. And, you know, it can be funny, but it's very hard to ferret this out. So don't feel badly for not diagnosing her, Malcolm. I know you're taking this on seriously for yourself, but you couldn't have seen that coming. Believe me, there's no way. There's no way you could have. Only she could have grasped for help. And that's really the big lesson here today, I think, in this podcast. People that feel these feelings that we're going to talk about, do not feel ashamed to get help. Please don't. Because there are so many great therapists out there. I know, I've been to a couple of them, okay? And I'm not ashamed to tell you that. There have been moments in my life when I've just been struck to the floor. When I lost my dad suddenly, unexpectedly, he was struck down at a very young age. And I did not know how to deal with that. And my mom was ready to commit suicide on her, you know, herself. And I had to go and try to keep her head together. And I sought counseling, and I'll tell you what, it was a lifesaver. It was a lifesaver for me. And there are so many times when people, I think we're taught a lot of times too, to try to just bear up, you know, bear up under the brunt of things. And, you know, come on, you know, get up and be a man or be a woman and, you know, take this on. And we're so hard on ourselves sometimes. We really have to give ourselves that space. Give yourself a little bit of room so that you can process what's just happened. I mean, I needed to take time from away from work, and I needed to process the death of my dad. And that took me months to do. But like I said, I'm not ashamed to talk about it, obviously. And I would, any friend that I have that I even see these kind of things going on, and I've had friends that have been these overachiever types, and I pull them aside. I'm one of these people. I will give you advice whether you want it or not. But I pull you aside because I'm just one of those people that will say, look, if you need a good counselor, I have a wallet full of names, okay? I have some great counselors. I mean, I have males, I have females, I have young ones, I have old ones. I mean, if you can just get that fit with the right person and just start talking and get some feedback and some solutions and say, wow, you know, I can really do this. I can really slow down and forgive myself and cut myself some slack here.
I'm really glad you're saying that, Ava, because, you know, this idea that maybe Kelly was being, you know, modest or what have you. I know that when I actually told people that I was not happy, some people would say to me, girl, you better shut up. Like, you have everything. You have this amazing career and, you know, the fancy car and the house and all this success and fame. Like, nobody around me wanted to hear it. They told me I should be grateful. So I did stay silent. I didn't feel like I had anyone that I could talk to. And, you know, fortunately, like you're saying, I did reach out and I found an incredible therapist that helped a lot just to be able to make sense of it. And I'm really grateful that it was actually the pediatrician that was taking care of my daughter. She kind of looked at me one day and she said, you are not well. And I remember just like tearing up, thinking like, no, I'm putting on this good face, like I'm holding it all together. And she said, look, I can tell that you are just not settled. And she pulled, like you said, she pulled out of her little box two names. And one of the therapists was, you know, the one I chose. I sat down and I said, okay, this is the real deal. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to tell him everything. I told him every dark thought I had and how I was, you know, up at night and I had sleepless nights and racing thoughts and just really just, you know, I just confessed it all. And I told him that I thought I was crazy and that maybe I needed to be hospitalized. And you know what, Ava? He actually said, no, you're not crazy. He said, you just needed to process some of what's going on inside of you. And what blew my mind was I thought I needed to be medicated and maybe hospitalized. And he said, no, you're not depressed. And this I know sounds a little crazy, but he literally said, you're not depressed. You're just maladjusted. And in my case, it was so true. I wasn't living a life true to my heart's calling. And I was denying all of those internal signs of discomfort and dis-ease. So I know it may not have been the same case with Kelly and Malcolm. I know you shared a little bit about what was going on in her life and how what they found when they encountered her.
Yeah.
I think it's having a safe place to be able to process the dark thoughts inside of us is so crucial.
All right. So when it comes to a high functioning depression, the state of depression, I mean, it's safe to say then that Andrea, you, Ava, you, and I, myself, we all have experienced this on a very big level, okay? So I can see that now. So we are all speaking about this from a state of experience. I think it's important to say that at this point. All being achievers, all wanting to reach higher in life, and that we've been in this mode of being a high-functioning state of depression. So we're going to pause just a moment here. And I want to leave you this thought here on Kelly Murphy's show page and website on America Out Loud. It says right at the top there, everything you want from your dream life is on the other side of fear. It's something that Kelly Murphy talked about all the time, on the other side of fear. We'll pick that up on the other side of this break in just a moment with Dr. Andrea Pennington and Ava Armstrong. Be right back with you. We are excited indeed to be celebrating our one-year anniversary here at America Out Loud. And we could not have done it without you. Well, in short order, we've become one of the fastest-growing podcast and talk radio networks in the world. For all the latest news, entertainment, your blogging, and now web TV, as we celebrate our one-year anniversary here, and we'll see you back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Well, I'm not sure why we take our health for granted, but I know that many of us do, include me in that company. Recently, I had a couple of health scares that got my attention real quick. I started a new product called Healthy Cell. I took it for about 3 weeks, and man, I started to feel really good. I found myself sleeping better at night, had more energy in the day, and less stress and anxieties, and just feeling better overall. Well, with those kind of results, I knew I had to do something, so I reached to the company directly with a request to bring Healthy Cell back to America Out Loud, and here it is. Well, typically you'd pay $110 plus shipping and handling. Well, now you get it for just $79.99 for the monthly plan plus free shipping. That's right, they'll pick up the shipping, and you pay just $79.99. Use the code OUTLOUD on HealthyCell.com, or just click the banner on the front page of AmericaOutLoud.com.
Welcome back to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. My name is Ava Armstrong, and I'm speaking today with Malcolm OutLoud and Dr. Andrea Pennington. And we're speaking about real-life ways of helping high-functioning depressives. And this is a difficult subject. And the real point I think we want to make in this podcast is that if you are a high-functioning depressive, it's very, very important that you reach out and get help. And I'll toss it to Dr. Andrea to talk more about that.
Thank you, Ava. You know, Malcolm, before we went to the break, you mentioned something that Kelly wrote about getting to the other side of fear, that your dream life is on the other side of fear. And it just makes me sad, but it also makes me really want to bring up this idea that many times for someone who is a highly functioning person, if they're dealing with depression, their greatest fear is almost being outed as being imperfect. And to Ava's point, getting help means we have to admit to at least someone that we're suffering. And I think that the challenge is because, as you pointed out in this article on scarymommy.com, one of the signs that you might be a high-functioning depressive is that you are a bit of a perfectionist. And even though we usually think that that's a good thing to have high standards and to go for the gold and whatnot, we do recognize that there's this unrealistic demand that we place on ourselves to be perfect. And admitting that you're dealing with these dark thoughts and admitting that despite having so much and being so strong that you're feeling so weak can be very scary. But to your point, Ava, that's what we need to do. We need to get that help. So I would just invite anyone who is dealing with this issue, certainly visit us at AmericaOutLoud.com, where perhaps we can share some links, certainly to the suicide hotline prevention, so that you can reach out and speak to someone in a very non-judgmental way so that you get the help that you need.
Right. And I'd like to just say one thing, too. I probably should have said it when we came back in, but I think when you go to that first appointment, Andrea, you know how that, you know, you have like those butterflies in your stomach and you're thinking, oh, gosh, I'm going into a psychotherapist or a counselor or whoever it is. And this is a stranger. They don't know me. And so there's all this stress that you have built up in your mind, especially if you've never been counsel before. So I can remember, I just want to tell you, my first counselor was a woman, and she was close in age to me, not much older. And I had more fun. I cried, I laughed. I mean, in that first session that I had with her, I bonded immediately. Her name was Nancy. And I could not wait to go back to my next session. And I just want to throw that out there, because a lot of people think this is, you know, you're going to go in there and have stomach cramps and, you know, be all nervous and everything. And you are at first. But if you click with that person, it's amazing. It's just life changing. And the relationship that you develop is so close. It's much different than a family member or a friend. That person actually becomes a friend to you, though. So I just wanted to throw that out there about what that first initial counseling session is
so
like.
When both of you were at the height then of this state of being, again, what we're classifying here as a high-functioning depressive, mm-hmm. I want to ask you, you both sought help from a knowledgeable person in that realm, a psychotherapist. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And was that was part of the key, I'm guessing you're saying, to get yourself out of this. And we should talk about some of the steps that you took, I'm wondering. Now, I want to put out on the table with you both that, so I have never seen a psychotherapist in my life. Never.
You don't know what you're missing.
Yeah, well, I've never sat with a psychotherapist. I never have. I have several on the platform here, and people I just adore that are very knowledgeable in this realm, and physicians who understand it. But I have never ever. And so when I was at my height of being a high functioning in my deep dark state of depression, because I went through a really dark period of time for about 3 years, ladies. How long did you all go through? How many years did this take? It was at least 3 years for me.
Yeah, I'm sad to say that mine was decades, Malcolm. It was pretty bad from childhood up until early 30s.
Yeah. Ava, how long was yours?
Just for a good year, at least, mm-hmm. a full year.
Okay. So if I bring mine back, Andrea, it depends at what state. Mine was for a lot of years as well, but I hit it even more. So I can't say it was just the 3 years. I would probably say, like you, I struggled for a long time. But it was an internal struggle. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes.
But the balloon popped for those 3 years where it really sucked. And now when it really got to where the rubber meets the road here, when it was really at its worst, be honest with me now. Did you look around your life and consider the world without you, number one? What did that look like? I don't say did you go and try to commit suicide. It's not exactly what I'm asking, but do you have thoughts around that? Are there thoughts that have entered your mind of what it would be like and if you're not here and what happened? Did you ever think in those terms?
Yeah, we call that, the technical term is suicidal ideation. When you actually have thoughts about the suicide, maybe not the full plan. There's a very big distinction between planning and, you know, just right. having these thoughts. But I did. Malcolm, the first time I had thoughts of I would be better off dead, I was a preteen. I think I wasn't even 14 or 15 at the time. And I had ideas about how I might do it. But I certainly never, you know, erected a plan. And I confided in somebody at my high school who then told the school counselor, and then they told my mom, and it became this whole thing.
Oh, so this is when you were really younger then too.
That was the first time that it was really, that it hit me so much that I actually thought life would be better without me in it, or at least my suffering would be gone if I were not here. And then the next time that it really surfaced, probably once in medical school, but it was really in my early 30s that those dark, I mean, I'm talking dark, Malcolm. This was, I literally was thinking through, okay, I'm going to leave a note for this family member. I like had it all structured out, like who would find me first so that it would be, yeah, I mean, I don't even like to say this anymore, but I never, you know, executed it, obviously. I got help before that. But there's something you have to understand, that these thoughts, when you're in a truly depressive state, it's not like you you're willing these thoughts. There is just literally this sense of overall doom and gloom where you literally feel like things would be better without you in this world. And even though I knew, I mean, as a physician and as a highly functioning, successful person, I thought, oh my God, I can't believe I'm going in that direction. But that is just literally how I felt at every, you know, ounce of me just felt like this life is not worth living.
Yeah, for me, everything was overwhelming. That's the way I felt. It was like all these things were crumbling. You know, I lost my dad. My mom was talking about suicide. She actually was talking about going in his car and putting, you know, taking the gas pipe of the car and dying of carbon monoxide. And when I heard her say that, I mean, I'm making her tea and I'm trying to get her out of bed. And I mean, it was just, the world felt like it was crumbling around me, and I couldn't go to work because I was afraid she was going to do herself in. And I just felt like I felt like I was drowning. That's the only way I can describe it. And I knew if I didn't get somebody to help me, that I would drown. That's the way I felt. And I was just crying all the time, you know, privately. And, you know, I was trying to be strong on the outside for everybody else, but, you know, your heart is breaking. And it's very normal. I mean, I learned later on, you know, all of this stuff is completely normal. It's normal to mourn and to, you know, to try to help other people and to not be able to do everything perfectly. You know, I had to learn, and it took me months to cut myself the slack. It really did. But I'm so glad that I got help. And that's the thing I think is so important to say. I don't feel embarrassed about it. I mean, I just feel so fortunate that I reached out.
And what about your mom, Ava? Did she get help?
She did not get help, but through me, she did, in a sense, because my counselor also helped me talk about her symptoms and how to manage some of the things she was going through. I got her into a support group for widows. I mean, I did a lot of things that, you know, just changed the picture all around, but it took me getting stronger to do all those things. So, you know, I guess the stigma, you know, of going to a counselor, you know, that just went by the wayside for me, because, you know, living and getting back to a normal life and being happy again and, you know, learning how to look at pictures of my dad. And, you know, I even had a recording of his voice on something. And it's like, you know, all those things now bring great pleasure to me. That's, you know, you got to get to the other side, and sometimes you need a hand. You need somebody to give you a hand and take you to that other side where you're normal or feeling good again about yourself. So, yeah, that's important.
It doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be, you know, in the C-suite or superstars. But it just means that they are still looking to the outside world like they still have it all together. You know, for some depressives who stop taking care of themselves, they stop combing their hair, brushing their teeth, they stop, you know, cleaning their house, they stop eating. But a high functioning person will look like, yeah, everything is, you know, okay. I go through the motions. I still do my laundry. I still do the grocery shopping. I think the other distinction is many times a high functioning depressive thinks that there is some sort of solution, not the psychological solution or getting help, but like maybe just one more achievement.
If I just do this. Yes.
Exactly. And so they just keep going, kind of like trudging through and, you know, dragging themselves through life, hoping that something is going to give. Whereas what they really need to do is stop long enough to feel the emotion and then to deal with it head on.
So people that are highly creative, I hear that term all the time, that people are highly creative and these achievers and like ultimately super creative people, they tend to fall pretty fast and hard, don't they?
That has been, you know, kind of a common pattern among artists and creatives and musicians.
I think it can fall in all fields, Malcolm. I really do. I can see, you know, there's brilliance in all different fields of endeavor. And I've seen doctors who are incredibly depressed, medical doctors. And, you know, they should be able to recognize depression, or you would think they would. But But they don't see it in themselves. That's what's really hard, is looking in a mirror and looking at yourself and saying, what is going on with me?
That's it,
Okay.
Ava. That's it.
Yeah.
When you
And
look in the mirror, the old mirror, huh?
yeah, you look in that mirror and you say, okay, I'm not sleeping. I'm working these incredible hours, and I'm rushing here and there, and I have no joy in my life at all. I mean, I'm right at the edge all the time. Flying here, flying there, running here, running there, doing for others and never taking care of really the inside of you. And that's what that feels like. It's like I've said to you before, it's like you're on that treadmill and that treadmill never shuts off. And that's what these people are experiencing, believe it or not. It's a continual, you can't stop, because if you stop, then the music will end. You know what I mean?
Right. It's a game of life, musical chairs, I guess, more or
Yes.
less. You just hope like hell there's a chair there when you go to sit in it, right? Or you fall on the
Right.
grass. But I think that for me, ladies, that I say, I said earlier when we said how long, and I said, well, I went through maybe a what I say 2.5, 3 year period or something like that, but. And of course, that was just a bunch of bullshit, actually, because it really went on for, as you did, Andre. It's something that sticks with you for a long time. So I struggled for a lot of years. And for me, it all fell apart as I transitioned from my boardrooms, from the corporate boardrooms, into the multimedia world. It was at that point in recent years, and it wasn't that long ago, that I completely fell apart. And I was in Chicago. And I was scheduled to speak. I had just started my radio career, in fact, and I was scheduled to speak at a mayor's conference in Chicago with the mayors there. And I was an invited guest and what have you. And I was just leaving a very long, long, long-term marriage. And I was with the woman of my dreams and somebody that Andrea and I have spoke about once or twice, perhaps. And
Yep.
we were in the hotel in Chicago, and it was winter time, as I recall. And so there were a lot of snow outside. Remember those windows at the hotel there on the Miracle Mile on Michigan Avenue? And I recall that the evening I was supposed to speak, I took sick. And I'm talking sick in the way that I was not feeling good, I was having a complete mental collapse. So I spent the next week, first of all, I never did speak. What I went to Chicago for and that I was an invited guest for, I never did speak. I collapsed. I collapsed. And I spent the week in turmoil, just falling apart totally as this friend of mine was with me. But I mean, just a mess, total mess. In bed, crying, walking up, stepping up near the windows, these very tall, I still remember those windows. I'll never forget those windows. She was afraid I was going to jump out of the window. And she
Oh,
knew it.
God.
She knew, yeah, she thought I was going out the window. And because she knew I was not in a great state.
Now, but Malcolm, was there some sort of inciting event? Like you say, this is when you transitioned into multimedia, but was there anything that pushed you over the edge?
Yeah, sure. It was the fact that I didn't know how to leave this long relationship I was in. For people I didn't want to disappoint,
Yeah.
and things I didn't want to do in life because I'm not interested in, I just, I don't have a, I
You're
don't,
very hard on yourself.
well, I just couldn't put myself to accept certain things, Ava. And so I got to this point where I completely crashed. And when I crashed, I mean, I really crashed. It was an ugly, ugly sight. It was bad. And but we stated a moment ago how you both got through it. And when you're at the lowest point, I asked you that. And you see, I was so stubborn that some people around me, and this dear, dear friend of mine was trying to get me to see a professional. And they were suggesting all kinds of things because they didn't quite know how to help because it really wasn't their profession or their background or their expertise, her expertise specifically. But for me, I would not seek help. I was in completely thick-headed. I was completely in denial. And I was going to handle this myself on my terms, the way I wanted to. And tough shit if you didn't like it.
No, that's bad, Malcolm. It's bad.
Well, and I put myself through the ringer. I mean, the total ringer. I mean, it was lights out, bottom out. It all sort of closed in at me. And how bad? Well, I ended up in another city. I ended up leaving that hotel in a wheelchair and ended up in another city in a very unusual circumstances with another very dear friend of mine who visited me down there. I'll tell you the other side of that on the other side of the break. We'll be right back with you. You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. You'll find a whole host of shows and a great lineup back at AmericaOutloud.com. And also, get the apps. We now stream 24/7 on Android and Apple. Just look for America Out Loud Talk Radio. So we are on an episode of High Function and Depression. It's Malcolm Out Loud here, and a topic that I've dedicated today's show to Kelly Iron Man Murphy, who took her life and committed suicide. She took herself out. She would be a, you know, she's a poster child for a high functioning depressive. So when Chicago happened, I spent that week struggling, suffering over near the windows, sleeping all day. I went through really a full week of a total state. That room was so dark, and the evil was all around that room. I remember going over the windows, looking out the windows, thinking it was all going to end, not knowing what was happening, tearing myself apart, no mercy whatsoever, really complicated, upset that I had let a lot of my life go by, and I had not done what I wanted to do. Pissed off at myself, angry, really, really angry, not at anybody else, at myself, for all the things I should have done prior. And really now I was making all these changes in life, and yet I was upsetting a lot of people, and it was kicking my ass, and I was worried about everybody else, and I wasn't worried about myself. And so I was now sick, mentally, physically, I was drained. I couldn't walk. I was collapsing when I would walk. And so it was really dark in winter in Chicago. And so my dear friend who I was with, who really became my best friend in the world and a dear, dear lady who I admire very much, she got me on a plane. She didn't know what to do. She was trying to think of, it wasn't her expertise clearly, but she was just trying to be with me, guide me through it, hold my hand, walk me through it. I told her I needed to see the sun. I needed to see some sun. I needed to get out of here, and I needed to get away. Started thinking of other countries, other places. I just needed a complete change at that moment. I was done with the speaking thing. I was done with Chicago. I was done with all of it after a worst week of my life. We flew down. They brought a wheelchair in for me. I went by wheelchair in a collapsed mode through the airports. I remember this like it was yesterday. It was the most terrific moment. And I get on a plane and we fly down to Miami. And they whisk me from Miami, from the wheelchair, into this waiting car. And I get to this hotel, this beautiful resort overlooking, and just to catch the sun before it's setting. This dream or this thought or this idea that I needed to see the sun and feel the rays was now upon me. And as I sat there at this place in the Miami area, and this lady that I was with knew the Miami area very well because she had grown up there as a child. And so she had picked a place she could easily get to, so on and so forth. Okay, cool. And as I sit there, as the sun, she goes in to check in, and I'm outside, and I went over near the water. She was afraid and came out and thought I was going to jump in. She thought I was suicidal. And as I stood at the water edge of this deep, where it dropped off of the water, I just was thinking of everything in life, everything that was going on around me, just all the pieces. And I then laid in this chair, this lounge chair, outside of this warmth area where the sun was coming through. And I was able to experience the sun for about maybe 20 minutes as I sat there on this chair and just lost everything in me, the will for all of it. There were people looking through a window of a spa next door. I didn't realize they could see me. And they could see me. And they could see the interactions I was having and that I was having with this lady. That all came back the next day, and I didn't realize that anybody was watching anything. It was at that moment that I really was at the rock bottom, and I discovered a whole lot of things over the next few days about life. My very, very dear friend, who I have spoke to you before about on this show and on my platform, a person I admire very much, Larry, my dear, dear, one of my dearest friends, Larry, who I have since lost, who passed away just not too long ago, just a couple of years ago now. And he flew down to Miami immediately to be with me and to spend some time. My friend had called him to be down there. And it was the next day I was at the spa having a service there. She had booked a massage or something for me, whatever it was. And the ladies looked at me and said, "Are you the gentleman that was outside last night?" Because they didn't know it was him. I said, what do you mean? They said, "Just outside the window, there was a gentleman here who was, you're him."
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I said, "Oh, yeah." And that's exactly how it came to me. I said, "What do you mean?" And they said, "Well, we seen you, and we seen the look, and we seen what something was going on in your life, and we could see your emotions, and we could see the way you reached to that lady that was with you, and we could see your love and what you meant to each other, and we just thought, wow, that's like a moment in life, and that something was going on that was like big in your life." And I stopped at that moment, and I just let out a big breath and said, "Yeah, I think it was me." And anyway, so my friend Larry came down, and I spent the next week or so trying to rebuild myself for what was next and what was going to happen in life and where I was going to take this show. The life is a show, right? Correct? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So there are expectations we put on ourselves going through life is what I see, friends. So I had expectations in my own life that I can only share with both of you at this moment that is like this. So as a young boy, I felt I was supposed to accomplish certain things in my life, and I set out to do that in my life. I don't know why I had certain expectations, but I had them. When it had nothing to do with money in my life. I had made a lot of money in the corporate boardrooms. It had nothing to do with that. It had everything to do with everything else in life, okay? And finally, I get to a point where it's unraveling by the minute, you know, a mile a minute. And it's falling apart, and then you collapse, and it all just, you become drained, emotionally spent, over the top, you know, through the woods, done.
Yes.
And I got to that point in that worst way for me that I could possibly get to. And I had to really step back from all of it and understand, okay, where am I at? It was at that point that I really understood how life is a gift and how I need to be more grateful for all of the things that I have accomplished and where I'm at. And I need to stop being such an asshole to myself, you see? Because I had become so really sadistic to my own behavior, and I had become, you talk about being, I was always beating myself up.
Well, that's the classic example of depression. I hate to tell you this. Depression is anger turned inward. That's what it is. It's a self-loathing, and that's, you were depressed.
Oh, I was really there, Ava. I was so, yeah. I was really angry with Malcolm. I was mad with me. I was really so pissed off at myself. I got to tell you, ladies, I would have,
with a high functioner like you, you're like a dog with a bone, okay?
Right.
And that's what this turns into. And this is what happened to your friend Kelly. And this is what happens to a lot of brilliant people. We are smart people, and we think we can fix ourselves, okay? And this is not something we can fix. It's something we have to learn how to cope with. And it's something that we need someone else to give us a hand with. And we actually have to stop and admit, this is the tough part, admit, you're human. You have feelings. You have emotions. You need help.
But I didn't want to be human, Ava. I wanted to be Superman. You understand?
Yeah, but we can't have that. We can't have that. And you know what? That's so typical of men, though, too. I hate to be sexist in my statement here, but a lot of women are okay with seeking help, but a lot of guys won't. I've had some guy friends that I've tried to get into help, and I'll tell you what, they are very, very... They really balk at it. They don't want the stigma. They don't want anybody knowing. You know, they're just really...
And they're also really terrible at self-compassion. So, Malcolm, I'm curious to know if you were beating yourself up for leaving that relationship and worrying about who you were letting down, and you were so mad at Malcolm, how did you find self-compassion and self-forgiveness?
Well, it was about that, Andrea. It was about that. It was all about the, I turned the hate inward to myself. But there are reasons why family members around me, very intimate relatives, which I wish to leave nameless, they disowned me. When I made the changes in my life and left the relationship, they all threw me away. Really, they
wow.
did. Yeah. And some really very close people, and they know who they were. And they don't talk to me today because of it. I still never talk to them again. They totally disowned me. They wanted nothing to do with me. Now, I tried to do it the right way, whatever that meant, the right way. But I was now at a point of trying to put myself first, finally. But it didn't feel good anymore. It didn't feel good to put myself first because I was paying a very big price for it in all ways. So what happened is I sacrificed all of that, and I started to dislike myself in a bigger way because I wasn't fully embracing the future, Andrea. I wasn't embracing totally what I had right on my doorstep and what I wanted to be and do. And I wasn't embracing the fact of that I couldn't let this other thing go because I didn't want to leave other people unsettled who there were expectations of me. And I thought I was supposed to fulfill those expectations. None of it's what I wanted. None of it's what I wanted for me. So there was no self-happiness here. There was no where I wanted to be or who I was. It was all about everybody else. You understand?
Yes, yes. And that's not good because you have to give to yourself. You have to love yourself.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds really crazy in a way, but
yeah.
You have to really look in a mirror and say, I love that person. And with all his faults and all his, you know, quirks or whatever, you've got to love you.
This is a challenging situation to get through alone. And the number one thing you need to do is get out of your head and into your heart. And the best way we can sink into our heart and our soul is to connect with someone else. So even if it feels scary, that's going to be your salvation. Out of the head, into the heart. Because if we stay in those doomy, gloomy thoughts, it will always look like a bleak future. But there is light on the other side, and there is hope on the other side.
I think people that are hypercritical of themselves, they really need to be able to step back and recognize that for what it is. It's not good. It will only lead to something worse. And eventually, your treadmill will go into overdrive and you'll fall off it. So I think you really have to just not think about stigma. You've got to really think about what's best for you and how to make your life happier.
Yeah. Well, that's great advice from both of you, and I know you're both spot on. We all determine how to live our lives in the best way that we can and we think possible. And we learn every day as we grow and mature and we get to a point of our life that we can be happy. I think the key you've both pointed out to me is, are you happy with yourself? That is the measurement of success, my friends. There is nothing else you have in your life that could possibly mean success than your happiness. That is the only thing that can possibly mean success, is your happiness. And so you have to reach for that happiness. I share with you this with Kelly Iron Man Murphy, Kelly Murphy. So she wrote a book, Fear is Horseplay is the name of the book. It's a children's book because of a little boy whose name was Alex, lost his life in cancer, who was a best friend of her little boy. And she wrote a book on Alex about who lost his life. He died with cancer, and she gave a lot of money to children's cancer and other things. And I have the book in front of me in my hands right now, Fear is Horseplay, great illustrations. It's a children's book. This book, her best friend gave me the last segment of these books. I got about 25 to 30 of them. I want to do something special at one point. I haven't determined what that is yet, to raise money for charity and awareness about depression. I need to put my heads together with like Andrea and Ava and others on the platform and at some point do something about this. I don't know what that is today. I'm not prepared for that. But I have these incredible books, Fear is Horseplay. And there's such an unbelievable message in here about fear and the way Kelly tackled life. And I want to tell you, again, if you are hearing this in our normal talk radio time here on America Out Loud, you just go to the show, AmericaOutLoud.com, and on the search button, you type in Kelly Murphy, and you'll get all kinds of really interesting things about this magnificent, beautiful, gorgeous lady, human being who was here one time, you know? So this beautiful, inspirational lady took herself out in the most horrific way possible. And there's a whole lot of story there. In dedication to her life, after this show plays on talk radio today, at our normal time at 5 p.m. and the encore at 11 p.m., I will take the next 3 hours after this show, and I'm going to play Kelly Murphy, her shows. There are three incredible shows I'm going to pull together from her archives and her library and play them as a special dedication to Kelly Murphy on our network. I will also link the shows to the show post when this goes live on America Out Loud, and you can see it there. And may God rest in peace, and God rest her soul, of course. Her message, everything you want from your dream life is on the other side of fear. Dr. Andrea Pennington, Ava Armstrong, this is Malcolm Out Loud. To be continued, friends.
Wow, that was a beautiful message.
Very well done.